Right, that was... It was a situation going back to the framework of New York State government and the characteristics of the process of decision-making with all of the other state agencies. The university was just one of the other state agencies.
Just one of the other agencies. Yes. It was treated as an agency. And I guess there were differences or nominal differences, but there one can certainly defend a level of oversight by the government, which is ultimately responsible for the university. But it was an extensive multiple step and multiple area of approval and pre-audit of so many decisions.
Right. Can you be specific about the nature of the divisions, either the divisions within the faculty or the divisions between students and university staff? You say that there were divisions. And some aggressive behavior on both sides?
On both sides. One that was immediately obvious and actually did not ultimately become a major factor had been the division between the supporters and the opponents of the candidate that had been submitted for presidency, Dr. Pond, which I had been warned that that was going to be a big difficulty and so on. Actually, it turned out not to be. Mm-hmm. It was there, but it did not come as a major part. Within the faculty, within the Senate, for example, there appeared to be a continual harangue between administration and the president's office and people in the Senate, which seemed to improve as time went on. It wasn't perfect. Some of the people who were let's say habitual opponents of administration and spoke out cleverly sometimes, not cleverly at others in faculty senate meetings. The students, there are different groups of students who demonstrated, if you will, at the drop of a hat. There was a group that had identified itself as communist. There had been a group that called itself, I think, the Red Balloon. There was another group which used to put signs all over the campus, which concerned itself nominally with a big concern of all of us, namely combating racism, but it didn't seem to be the underlying purpose of that group, but other more radical agendas. There were divisions of the main campus and the Health Science Center, where very large investments were being made,
in the Health Science Center,
right. And where things had not been done on time, everything from construction and opening of the university hospital to the differential salary and supplemental income arrangements with the faculty, and particularly in the College of Medicine, which caused a considerable difference among them. A lot of the troubles had to do with the maintenance of the physical plant. Many things had to be deferred, so that it was not a tranquil appearing campus. You can walk on an older, more established campus and have an idea of being at a site of beauty or tranquility or isolation from the troubles of the world, where one can, maybe this is idealized and a Mr. Chips type of
yes.
thing, but
right.
one does get this many times on a campus of a university.
Right.
This looked more like an industrial center in a way.
The trees hadn't grown up.
Trees hadn't grown. People didn't have respect or love. I rather quickly and jokingly offered a prize to anyone who would write an alma mater, which would be guaranteed to bring tears to the eyes of alumni. Somebody actually tried to write this. A very brilliant student who was graduating that year did compose a tune and song that she thought would be good alma mater. It seemed that different student groups were against each other. It was the means that seemed to be used to get across the ideas that was perhaps almost could be put into something which could be called the importance of etiquette. People just didn't seem to respect each other, and there were great harangues instead of sitting down and solving the problems. That there would be demands made. I was denounced on more than one occasion in demonstrations by people that didn't even know me.
You were simply administration.
I was simply administration, right. Man, whatever that was. And I was named administration.
Yes. Right. That's a function partly of the background from which our student body largely came from. Or would you say that? Perhaps not.
Statistically, that appears to be true. For example, the vandalism on the campus, which was certainly excessive and very disagreeable, the studies have shown that vandalism on a campus is more likely to be a freshman student drunk and from a large metropolitan area. Mm-hmm. And we were certainly from a large metropolitan area. Being near one of the largest in the United States, New York City.
Right. What do you consider to have been your contribution to the ongoing of Stony Brook?
I tried not to be just a caretaker.
Yes.
Which was one of the functions which I could have taken on very consciously of trying to hold things together and not shake anything up or not do anything, as it were, until the new president was recruited. I put a lot of attention to trying to get faculty administration and student body together in a more collegial atmosphere. And to the extent that I succeeded at Stony Brook, I would say that this would be the major achievement which I would look upon. That we tried to do this in a number of different ways. Some of it, perhaps with my perverse sense of humor,
You were very well liked. Everything that I got in the way of scuttlebutt indicated that you were a focal point of approval, both from the standpoint of purpose and the standpoint of your methods. But I was on the outside, but people would have been happy to have you stay on, at least the people I knew.
That was not to be.
Yes,
there were some suggestions about that during the time that I was there.
Yeah.
But I had made a commitment to myself, the institution from which I came, and to the chancellor and the board of trustees, mm-hmm. that I would not be a candidate under any circumstances. We stuck to that, and although it was brought up on more than one occasion, it was never seriously put forward. And I was very pleased at the end when they did recruit a highly capable new president who had considerable vigor and was a highly respected individual both in the scientific field and in his prior administrative appointment in Southern California.
He was screened back on the campus in Southern California. In other words, they checked carefully.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yes, he was dean of the, I've forgotten the exact title of it.
I think he was academic vice president, yeah.
Yes.
All right. Okay.
Also a physicist, which seemed to be the tradition.
Seems to be the tradition.
I don't think they have recruited him because he was a physicist, but because of his energy, the sense he seemed to put together, and his desire to face a very tough challenge.
Mm-hmm. What would you say about the toughness of the challenge at Stony Brook?
It was tough. I look back upon that 13 months, however, as one of the most challenging and really one of the most challenging and also most rewarding and ultimately pleasant experiences of my life.
Good.
You know, I leave it to others to judge whether I accomplished everything, but I have the self-feeling that that I, put it directly, did something important.
Mm-hmm.
And I think my late wife, Betty, also did something important.
She was able to play the role of the wife of the president with regard, vis-a-vis the faculty wives.
Yes.
And do it well. And that's important, extremely important.
I guess another accomplishment, I don't know how much I had to do with it, but I had something to do with it, which was a major administrative challenge for some of the reasons that we have talked about before, was the final opening of the University Hospital.
Yes.
Which one could never consider it done until it was actually done, with the multiple approvals to go through. Everything from the approvals of purchasing the equipment to the computer program for it, to getting the raccoons out of the walls of the building, which they set up house during its construction, which I think was one of the more humorous things of it. The people actually got pictures of the raccoons when the walls way up at the top. We had a delivery system for things from one place to the other, which was quite difficult getting started, which was a very expensive, very modern idea of a computer-controlled delivery system for everything from charts to medication, which had some defects in it. It had been started by one company and finished by another. The people who installed it couldn't, many of them were not able to they had been sent from another country and they couldn't speak English. So they had difficulty communicating with the master architect, but we used to say this was the railroad system for the raccoons in the walls. Other things which may be more apocryphal than true in memory, one was in the purchase of some of the equipment, which illustrated the difficulty of doing things by people at a distance who were really not knowledgeable, somebody decided that the purchase order for artificial hip was too big for one order, so they ordered the different parts from different companies that didn't fit together, so it was completely useless. There are multiple examples such as that throughout the university. But we finally got it open. And I suspect it's thriving, although I have no direct knowledge of it now.
Seems to be. I think they're up around 450 beds now.
Are they?
And the reputation of the individuals, including Dee, for instance, from England, orthopedics,
good.
Very good, very, very high.
They recruited certainly outstanding people in many areas and had people who were outstanding in many scientific and non-scientific fields. And it had the essentials of developing into a great university. I think it still has those essentials. Some of the targets of the original thought may be beyond achievable levels with the strictures of budgeting, the lack of targets. The targets were rather directly stated many times, such as to be the Berkeley of the East. And
that sounds like John Toll.
That sounded like him, and this was stated explicitly, as I remember it, in the publicity surrounding the report of the Middle States visit.
The Heald report, an institution to stand with the finest.
Yes.
In the nation.
And I think it had that potential. One of the things which perhaps was not achieved, it has to do with the size. It grew beyond perhaps the demand for by students of a university of that type on Long Island, and the targets of enrollment upon which some things of sizing, budgeting, buildings, and so forth were placed were not achieved, and as I understand it, have not been achieved now. And many universities are consolidating a bit in terms of size of student body, which unfortunately in the formula makers of budget comes to how much budget there is.
That's right. It's somewhere between 17,000 and 18,000. Now, in size. There had been talk 20 years ago of 28,000 or at least 20,000,
yes.
That sort of thing. The discussion of the writing of a history of the early years made it well. The discussion took place in the feeling. In an atmosphere of pride and excitement, feeling that somehow a record of this rapid development of a first-rate institution should be accounted for. And then they were a little unsure of just what time span the history should include. The 25th year was passed by without any history. And they were thinking of the 25th year on the Stony Brook campus, but actually that would have been the 30th year. So they shelved the idea of writing a history. But during the discussion, it became clear that a lot of the source material in people's heads no longer was available. The three governors had died, Dewey, Harriman, and Rockefeller. The chairman of the Board of Trustees, Frank Moore, was dead. One of the presidents, Tom Hamilton, was dead. Our first dean on the Stony Brook campus, Stan Ross, was dead. The chairman of the council, Judge Sullivan, was dead. And so it became clear that if you're going to have any of the information that was in people's minds, you had to get it down orally on a tape before they left the land of the living. And so this is what I was asked to do, and I agreed to do it, even though I'm also working on my my own project. And a call has gone out for faculty folders, files, to be sent into the special collections, the archives. And also recollections if they want to get them down either on tape or in writing. I'm interviewing people who are off campus and not part of the faculty. You're one of them.
Well, thank you.
Can you think of anything else? Sometimes it's a question of the questions that I ask of you.
Well, the thing that I intended to do, or that my reason for being at Stony Brook was largely accomplished. One was that my appointment turned out to be non-controversial as far as me being the personal choice. And some of those who had held rather difficult positions before me were very courteous and did not show resentment because of my presence.
Who?
Specifically, people who had been very close to Dr. Pond and Dr. Pond himself. He was very helpful to me, did not intrude or try to influence me, but was a valuable source of information and of insight. Was very friendly, and did not reveal to me any evidence of personal bitterness or the like. And this was rather general. One faculty member who had been, I was told that he was a very difficult person with whom to deal, a prominent leader on the faculty. Some even said that he was granted an unusual sabbatical in order to get him out of the way for a period of time when he came back early on in my own administration. And we spoke together very frankly, and I rather liked him, and I think we became friends.
You want to cite the name?
He was in sociology.
Norman Goodman?
Goodman, yes. We teased each other a little bit, I think, on the floor of the Senate, I was very touched on the, just before I left Stony Brook, that he came to see me. I had just made a decision with respect to tenure for a member of his, the faculty of his department.